Hello, everybody. Thanks for coming to our talk. We really appreciate you taking the time to hear from us. You're here for Avoiding Cascading Failures. I'm Craig Fender from eBay. I'm a senior technical duty officer. That's an SRE and an incident commander and a consultant, sort of all wrapped in one. This is my partner.
Hi, I'm Ravi Punati. I have been part of the eBay for the past 4 years. Been involved with distributed systems, database, and applications, most recently with data center infrastructure and cloud automation. In my current role, we are trying to basically transform from the central ops to site reliability engineering.
All right. Before we go into that, we'll just give you a little bit of a glimpse of eBay. eBay is a company you're probably familiar with. We are an enabler of e-commerce across the globe. We do, as Thomas Friedman said, make the world flat. That means that wherever you are in the world, you can compete on a global scale. Some of the things that aren't always known about eBay is that we have tipped the point where most of our customers have grown in the international space, so we're about 57% international revenue. 162 million buyers as of Q4 of 2015, 800 million live listings. And one thing that we like to point out in presentations like this is that we do new merchandise. Some people may associate us primarily with an auction site, but as it happens, we are quite a bit of our revenue is from mobile and from new merchandise. In fact, by the time I finish this sentence, assuming I do, someone has bought a tablet on a mobile device, and every 10 seconds, a lady's handbag is bought via mobile in the U.S. And I found that stat took me back a little bit when I saw it, but then I was in a talk and saw somebody next to me buying one on eBay. So it happens. And it's work we're very proud of. What's that? Doesn't include the MRS? I don't have a specific metric on that. We'll have to research that for you. All of that is just to say that eBay is complex. It's grown over time. You know, it started over 20 years ago. And as our technology evolves, as our innovation evolves, certain patterns become emergent. This is actually the International Space Station, and they're looking at metrics on the wall to guide the International Space Station, keep it from burning. As you can see, there's some elements in here that will look familiar in a second. We've got rows of experts all organized looking at the same thing. At eBay Operations, we have a very similar thing. You know, eBay starts off with a centralized NOC, where you have alarm and you have phone calls. And that's still a part of what we do, but we have changed from a network operations center, just computers and alarms and people running on the mill, to a site engineering center, which means that the SREs and the engineers who work there are experts in the domain, and that means that they have two things that may be a little different than what I've heard in other organizations, which is we basically have our whole SRE operation right there. And we have a co-location in another part of the country, and we hand issues off for each other. So the people who work in that room are not on call. But we can do a smooth transition. But at the same time, we are feeding back into the continuous improvement and improving the systems that help us detect, investigate, mitigate, and repair eBay as it needs it. So what we hope to show share with you today, as much as we will learn, and is that this is our journey. And with all this complexity, it can lead to fragility. And we mitigate that with redundancy, resilience, and robustness. Speaking of, eBay itself is like a bridge between buyers. All the good presentations have cats. And sellers. Okay. I also learned today that the word artisanal, anything that's handcrafted is artisanal. So this is my artisanal whiteboard drawing to extend the metaphor that eBay is a bridge. All of our infrastructures that we're managing, you have people who want stuff and people who are going to fulfill that stuff. For us, it's buyers and sellers, but all of us solve that problem with our infrastructure, the network, the database, the storage. You have feature sets and availability zones. And what we want to talk about today is how do we keep that bridge from falling over completely and making your customers swim with the sharks. So for us, we achieve that with resiliency and redundancy and also the intelligent injection of failure. Well, it's supposed to be the intelligent injection of failure. Before we talk about that, why don't we talk about what a failure is?
So as you all know, what's a failure? Failure is an inability to perform a function correctly in a given amount of time. So in that sentence, you have three aspects. One is an availability aspect, reliability aspects, as well as performance aspect.
So you've probably heard the idiom, failure is not an option, but for us, it's a requirement. This is an overview of our architecture, simplified for legal and comprehension reasons. Basically, it's not going to hold much surprises for you. We have a web tier, we have an app tier, we have storage and data store backends and services. At each stack, at each layer of the stack, we achieve redundancy and resiliency by being in multiple regions, and we organize the site by feature set and by load balanced pools. So you do something like sign in on eBay, that's going to be one pool, it's going to be in multiple regions, and we're going to have multiple web tiers. One of the things that we do with our traffic routing through a combination of GTM and just straight load balancing, we make sure that the web tiers have every app tier in it prioritized by weight. So that allows automatic traffic redirection when there's a problem, and also allows us to have the option of proactively doing that. There's a couple of kinds of failures that we can talk about, the atomic failure and the cascading failure.
So basically, when a fault is localized to a given service or a device, doesn't propagate that upstream or downstream or to the peers, we basically call it as an atomic failure. These atomic failures can happen in multiple ways at the services level, both in the software as well as in the database layer, as well as in the hardware device layer.
When enough of those atomic failures come together in a series of unfortunate events, to borrow the phrase, we have what's called a cascading failure.
So basically, as you see, the cascading failure, your failure is propagating upstream or downstream or laterally. So for example, like when you have a database that is down, it could potentially stack up the connections or exhaust your executor threads in that given application tier. That's a good example of how a database that is actually down can basically stack up the connections on a given app tier.
So as Ravi said, if we have enough failures of enough types that all connect together, you end up having a cascading failure where things fall apart. And things are going to break. How do you deal with those? There's two different kinds of cascading failures.
So as you can see here, there are basically services talking to the other services and services talking to the databases. The paradigm is pretty much simple. All the services talk to the other services using the client agent, service client agent. When they're talking to the data store, they talk using the data access layer. In both the cases, you do have actually the in-memory config bean that maintains a state for the given path, as example, the database or service, when it can detect in 10 to 15 milliseconds range, like if there is a problem with that path, and it can mark it up or mark it down so that the rest of the callers coming into that given service are not going to be waiting on that particular interaction. It can basically give a service not found exception or database not found exception so that those exceptions are going to be handled by the caller and return the respective results back to its callers.
Okay, so just as Ravi said, we're going to show you specifically how in each of these layers we can inject failure or automatically fail a given malperforming service in order to protect the overall user experience. The first thing we do in the room at SCC, eBay's SCC, is we have to detect it. This actually shows something of a journey that we have come from NOC to what we hope to be a more site reliability center. We used to have on the wall, just like Brian said in his talk, we had the top-level alarms. The most top-level alarm that we had was our top revenue-generating pools and load balancers and in each of the regions that happened there. But then as we grow, we end up with like 20,000 pools, so how are you going to watch them all on the wall? The moon wasn't available. JPL was mean about it. And so what we had to do is we created a time series database that took our pools and feature sets, and we created a new infrastructure that allowed us to show only the anomalies based on a 90, 95th, and 98th percentile based on a 6-week average. What that meant was that we can now see those connection stackings happening, And we can correlate them in the room because of the other top level monitors on the wall with where in the infrastructure we're having the problem. Here's our application monitor, which is showing you the pools again, and red is bad. And you can see in the lower portion of our dashboard, we're showing you what's marking down to preserve itself.
So as you can see, actually, the humans cannot do good at doing the context switching. Machines are really good at doing the context switching, so we do want to make use of that paradigm. So we do basically collect for every microservice or service that is deployed on the site critical metrics like the number of queries per second, errors per second, the average CPU utilization for that service, the various metrics like the average threads in that app server pool. So we do collect them, and our machine learning algorithms analyze them to understand if there are any deviations from the standards, and they basically bring that for the human interaction. So for a human to basically take a look into it, whether we need to act on or do some learning out of those patterns.
As Ravi was saying, we do the same kind of paradigm in our monitoring and anomaly detection for data stores and databases, shown here in this figure.
There are three different ways, either the database is down, or your SQL is timing out, or it's basically like there is like the SQL errors are coming. So we do have, and as I said, in the config bin, variables are actually managed by the interactive communication with the data store, and we do actually make them up or down so that path is actually marked up or down. So there are times we do need to actually make a hard set on taking that database down or database up based upon your proactive maintenance you are doing.
As Ravi said, we have the ability to control our services at a very minute level. Every node is part of our code-based framework. It's the paradigm that we encourage that all our developers to use. And even if the stack changes, we make sure that this sort of thing is exposed. What you're seeing there is XML configuration beans for just about every parameter that a node could have, but they're accessed through just a plain equivalent of a curl get or REST API so we can take mass action.
So basically, this is when we are wiring on the new features or wire off the new features, we do use the same mechanism to make those changes. So this happens in real time. There is no cache refresh update. It's pretty much in real time.
So what that allows us to do in automation is detect thresholds and mark down services that are malperforming so the whole user experience is preserved. If you didn't do that, our application tiers might connection stack, have memory problems, app server threads get exhausted, and we have a failure. But with automation tools and manual tools, we can observe things happening on that metaphorical bridge before they collapse completely. When we're talking about cascading failures, you also have to look at the bridge itself. So we also have, as many of us have, redundant hardware layers. So we have load balancers in pairs, and we have the ability to flex up and down, and we address network failures through the organization of highly connected and redundant interconnected paths. So each kinds of our traffic are in layers, and all of them are redundant. So that you wouldn't even notice when we have an outage. Similarly, when we need to up-rev our capacity or make sure we have enough capacity to handle peak times, we literally have shipping containers full of rack and stack that we can plug into our data centers. So in that way, we are able to meet our needs when necessary. All of this is to say that we prevent cascading failure by fostering innovation, but also funneling people through our different paradigms. Our command and control tools make it possible for us to prevent that cascading failure. It also helps us through this configuration beans and automation to make it not happen in the first place. So through those means, we make sure that we keep our site up and that everything continues on as it should. Sometimes, we want to invest in or innovate a very precious particular little unicorn of an architecture, but then that requires documentation, that requires system knowledge, and it requires it to be timely at the time that that occurs, which, for your precious unicorn, might not turn out well. All credit to ThinkGeek, where you can purchase unicorn meat. Sometimes disasters happen, though, and you can't. It's going to happen, and you have to deal with it very rapidly. This is why we have a centralized SRE and site engineering center. Sometimes things go awry, and a phone call costs you a lot of money. You can look at our previous legal approved slide there and do the math of what it costs, you know, per unit of time. If I call you and have to leave a voicemail, or and you're not there, or the phone tree doesn't quite work, or you're not up to speed on the issue, the whole theory of our room there is that we can take rapid action right then and there without having to call anyone. In that context, there's also some emergent behaviors that we've found in our journey that make those meaningful actions work right. This is a picture of Clive Betty. He is a lion tamer. You'll note, like a classic lion tamer that you may have heard of, he's got a chair with four legs. You wouldn't probably think that a lion is going to be thwarted much by a chair. There's actually a really interesting reason why a chair. Cats, even big ones, best presentations have cats, they can't focus reliably on more than three things at once. As it turns out, mammals, even smart ones like us, expensive ones like us, also our brains, according to neuroscience, will have to switch tasks once you add that one last task, and you will freeze, or at least you'll be delayed. You'll have to overcome your natural tendencies. Disasters are bad. And this is a trip I took to the Titan Missile Museum. They're called the Minuteman Missiles, a little morbid. And these guys don't think so. They think it's cool. But one thing I wanted to point out here is the meaningful action here, e.g. ending the world, boils down to three buttons. You'll note that they stayed within that operational paradigm of meaningful action and three buttons. After all, the phrase is finger on the button, not finger on the highly documented, redundantly documented procedure I mailed to you 6 months ago. What it is I need to do it, we're going to do it. Likewise, when you need to take meaningful action in eBay, we make sure our tools adhere to this kind of principle. We want to make them as simple as they need to be, but no simpler. And we have a thing that we call web-tier redirect, as well as a new one that we're making called global-tier redirect. And it allows us to use a vendor-neutral tool set to affect load balancers and GTM in three buttons. So we can exit a region, press of a button. Those of you who are not from around here, the Golden Gate actually has this thing called the road zipper, and it just fit into my metaphor. I had to put it up there. It's how they are able to redirect traffic in crisis. Here's just an example of how our tool works.
As we learned in the morning, I think from the global traffic management, we do want to have the ability to move the traffic from one availability zone to the other availability zone. In this given example, we have actually PHX that came on board. We do want it to move from SLC to PHX. This is a good way of evening out the traffic. At the same time, when we run into the issues on a given availability zone, we do want it to move from that availability zone into the new availability zone. So this tool actually helps us to make that transition happen, and we want this to be a command and control as opposed to an automatic failover from a one region or one availability zone to the other availability zone.
As we go through the stack, we continue that paradigm. We want to have tools that are simple to use so that all the rocket science is done before the crisis happens. There are other things that we can do to preserve the user experience.
So basically, like at any given point of time, we do want it to make sure all our five key flows are protected: registration, sign in, search for an item, view item, add to cart, and checkout. These are the key elements for us. Anything outside this is actually a bonus. When we have to basically deal with a disaster, we do basically look at enforcing some of the blocking the non-essential things to make sure these critical actions and critical flows are indeed going through.
So as Ravi pointed out, we are able to triage during a site crisis what the most important flows are. We can block bots, Google, Bing, sorry, we love you, but you know, when we're falling over, we gotta do it. We can wire off advertising, we love our sponsors, but if it keeps our buyers and sellers together during a crisis, then we'll do that. So at eBay, documentation is important, and understanding what your procedure is important. SOPs are important, but I have a little bit of a mantra that we try and consult with people as they're trying to get us to look at new dashboards. We want paradigms.
Not procedures.
Tools and not documents. Fisher-Price.
Not NASA.
Yeah. So in conclusion.
So as you basically see, you want it to bubble up any anomalies for human inspection, and you want to ensure all the failed paths are marked down, and we do it in a fail-fast way. And do you want to preserve the user experience to make sure all your major customer flows are flowing through? Obviously, use the systems to solve your systems approach to solve your problems.
We really appreciate you spending the time with us. We learn as much from doing this as hopefully you've learned from our journey. Are there any questions?
One of the problems you typically see with failing traffic over to data center is a lack of capacity, and it seems like you guys are in fixed data centers. How do you capacity plan for an emergency shift of traffic out of a region?
It's a really good question. So a couple things. There is a whole capacity department, and it's their job, like painting the Oakland Bay Bridge. Really love bridges this afternoon. They start from the stem, and they go to the stern, and they when they're done, they start over. But also, we have automatic tools that do capacity analysis for us. And you know, as we've matured, we start getting into fault domain analysis. It's key to us. You know, if you go back to the rocket ship launching method, right? You know, you got to do your homework before it happens. So making sure you have capacity at the time, that's okay. But the better time to have the capacity you need is 10 days ago when you saw your peak happen. So, to answer your question, we have trends about when our busy times are. We look at how we're doing in each region, and we design our site so that the entire site can go from any one region for any one feature. And we get reports regularly that your pool, your feature is out of spec.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if under the eBay workload, if there tends to be quite a bit of very bursty or spiky traffic, and what some of the things that you might do to kind of deal with that would be.
Well, that's also a very good question. On the main, the answer is no. As it turns out, human beings are very much like a school of fish. There are metrics on our walls that we watch, and we compare this week with last week all the time. So from day-to-day operations and week-to-week operations, we pretty much know what to expect. It'll either trend above or below, but the overall pattern will be the same. That being said, we, of course, have different initiatives to bring people in at certain times, or we have certain deals and such. We since we're the ones setting those deals, we make sure we work closely with the capacity teams to make sure that the kind of thing we're going to sell, all the features that are touched are up-revved enough to take that. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. Thanks very much for having us. We appreciate it.